This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick. What a difference a year makes. In November of 2020, Democrats were riding high. They were on their way to unified control of Congress and the White House, albeit with some hiccups. Fast forward a year, and President Joe Biden is a president with low approval ratings. And 1 year after he won the Commonwealth of Virginia by 10 points over Donald Trump, Republican Glenn Youngkin won the gubernatorial race over former Governor Terry McAuliffe. And up in New Jersey, which Biden won by almost 16 points, Democratic Governor Phil Murphy is in a squeaker, too close to call race with his Republican opponent, Jack Cittarelli. That's a big swing, especially when you consider Democrats handily won a recall election in California, where Gavin Newsom kept his job, just in September. What's next for the parties as they gear up for the 2022 election, and what happened? Here to explain everything, to every last detail, and this will leave you absolutely with no doubt as to what happened, Nathan Gonzalez will be joining us here on Political Theater's podcast to explain. Nathan, welcome. No pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And that'll only take about 5 minutes, and then we can talk about baseball for the rest.
That's right. There was a World Series, and I guess there's some justice there. Let's just talk about the World Series. The Braves won, the Astros lost. There we go. That's easier.
A win for America.
This is one of those elections that really tends to rattle people. The party of the president in power typically doesn't do great in off year elections because it's the first time the voters can register in a meaningful manner whether they approve or disapprove. But this is reminding a lot of people of 2009. 2009 was the last time that any Republican won a statewide race in Virginia, and it was also the first year of the unified Democratic control of the White House under Barack Obama, when they were mired in a big debate over health care. It's kind of mirrored in the way that the Democrats are debating a social safety spending package, an infrastructure package. Is this the kind of election that makes people really jittery?
Well, if you're a Democrat, I think it should. I think if you are in the camp, in that kind of big D Democratic camp that says, well, this is what happens when a president is in the White House, you lose the Virginia governor's race. And if you use that to dismiss what happened on Tuesday, I don't think that's a good thing for the Democratic Party to do, because when you take not only Glenn Youngkin's victory, but also what happened in New Jersey together, I think that adds up to a picture that there is something bigger going on, that it's not just about a certain group of voters in the Commonwealth of Virginia, that there's something larger going on, because you had one race that had all the kind of the time, money, and attention being spent in Virginia, and then you had another race in New Jersey that didn't get nearly the same amount of resources, but yet is a very dramatic underperformance compared to the last few cycles. And I think one of the reasons why New Jersey was such a surprise was that, you know, you had multiple cycles of Democrats doing well, and you had multiple races this year that showed that partisan performance maybe wasn't dramatic. I'm talking about the first district special election in New Mexico in June, talking about the California recall election, where it might have been a little bumpy on the way, but Democrats got it to where it needed to be. And then you had New Jersey and Virginia this week that turned out to be much more dramatic. So I think that this is a sign that Democrats have work to do. You mentioned the comparisons to 2009, 2010. One of the things I was talking about before this election was that in 2010, remember, Democrats passed the Affordable Care Act and then promptly ran away from it, ignored it, forgot it. They didn't want to talk about it. And I think that that's different to where we are this cycle, that if Democrats are able to pass some significant pieces of legislation, I think you will see them go out on the trail and try to sell it to voters. That's different. We'll figure out if voters are buying what Democrats are selling or what Democrats are passing. But I think you're going to see a different posture from the Democratic Party compared to 2010. All that being said, Republicans are on the brink of the majorities. They are so close in the Senate and the House. They need just a net gain of one seat in the Senate, just a net gain of five seats in the House. And they don't need to win places like Virginia or places like New Jersey to get to the majority. There are far more states and districts that are more competitive for them to get over the top. And that's, I think, why Republicans are feeling very emboldened right now.
And, you know, looking at the polling, I mean, it seems like they're, you know, after a few bumpy campaign cycles, polling seemed to get this right, especially in Virginia. I mean, New Jersey may be a different sort of situation, but the polls showed momentum for Glenn Youngkin, like a steady stream of momentum going toward him. And you know, I was struck. I went out to Shenandoah National Park over the past weekend, and I, you know, the signs that you saw, you know, they were almost all Youngkin signs, and there seemed to be a real enthusiasm for him in the more rural parts of Virginia. And I was hesitant to say, to sort of make that sort of judgment, because you saw a lot of that with Donald Trump in 2020, but it seemed real this time. The one other thing that polling showed too is that Democrats, you know, really did, you know, stick with McAuliffe, and Republicans really stuck with Youngkin. But where the Democrats, where the vote slipped away from them, and Youngkin, we're looking at probably him winning by about 2 or 3 points when all the votes are counted, where it slipped away from McAuliffe and where Democrats have shown a lot of strength in the last few years is in the suburbs. Youngkin didn't have to win like Loudoun County, for instance, but Youngkin made it close, and that just basically doomed McAuliffe, even though he ended up with like more votes than the last Democrat who was elected governor, now Ralph Northam, who's term limited. I mean, he, you know, McAuliffe got more votes, but still lost the election because he lost a lot of those swing districts. What were the reasons that happened?
Yeah, and I think Youngkin was helped by boosting turnout in the non-suburbs, right, in South and Southwest Virginia. But overall, talking about suburban voters, I actually, my mind goes to Star Wars, Jason. My mind goes to Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn. And when he said, your focus determines your reality. And I think with suburban voters, if suburban voters are focused on Donald J. Trump, they vote Democratic. I think that's clear. Now we know if suburban voters are focused on Democratic leadership, Democratic Congress, potentially Democratic overreach at multiple levels of government, they're going to be more likely to vote Republican. And that was, I think, a big key. And that is a challenge for Democrats moving forward, because they are still going to be in charge of sort of when we, during the 2022 election. So depending on how, you know, the health of the country, health of individual states, a lot of the burden is going to be on the Democratic Party. I'm glad you mentioned polling, because polling gets such a bad rap, and I'm going to sound like a polling apologist. It's not perfect, but in Virginia, it was actually pretty darn good. According to the Real Clear Politics final average had Youngkin plus about 2 points. According to the 538 polling average, it was about Youngkin plus one. Private polling showed that the race was close, and it was close. You know, like you said, Youngkin is probably going to win by about 2 or 3 points. Now you could say, oh, well, what about New Jersey? And I think that that's more of a lack of polling rather than a polling miss. There was limited polling that showed Murphy with a significant edge, and it looks like he's going to win very, very, very narrowly. But I think if we had had the same number or more pollsters diving into New Jersey in the final weeks, we might have picked up on things. And now I know, after making reaching out to Republican sources on election night, that Republicans did have some polling that showed it was close. They didn't have Chiarelli winning, but they didn't want to run around town championing those polls, because they didn't want to awaken the Democratic machine and have Democrats spend a bunch of money and turn it back into a partisan race.
That's really, I mean, just kind of fascinating. And what I'm I'll be curious to see once we get all the final results in Jersey, if what we see is the same issues, you know, for Democrats and where Republicans were able to capitalize in New Jersey. Whether, I mean, New Jersey is a very suburban place, so it's not like there's a lot of rural New Jersey to that just automatically goes for a Republican. I mean, most of the state is suburban or urban, but you know, it seems that these issues that, I mean, you mentioned that Youngkin was able to avoid being just identified as a Trump stand-in. I mean, this was helped by the fact that he didn't have to run in a primary. He was picked in a convention, and he has no record to run against, being a businessman, a former financier with the Carlyle Group. So I read one, I can't remember who it was, you know, said that, you know, he basically became a better version of Mitt Romney running at this level. And it seemed to me that the Republicans had a lot of success in these suburban areas with focusing on schools. They focused on something that McAuliffe said about, you know, school boards and curriculums and so forth. And, you know, without getting into the debate about how school curriculums or school boards should work, just the focus on that seemed to be, you know, something that took away the focus of, like, oh, the Democrats are, you know, in Congress are attempting to, you know, negotiate Medicare drugs down so people don't spend as much on that. I mean, the Republicans really seem to grab that and make it the issue that people focused on instead of the bigger ones that Democrats wanted to talk about and didn't really.
Yeah, I think Youngkin and Republicans effectively spoke to voters at their kitchen table. I mean, that's become a cliche in our political analysis, but I think they made issues relevant to enough voters in order to win, whereas Democrats are still arguing a little bit more in the hypothetical, like if you elect Republicans, this is what they're going to do, or when we pass this piece of legislation, this is how we're going to help you. And I think some voters saw more of the imminent threats described by Republicans rather than what Democrats are still trying to hash out on Capitol Hill. One of the key things, takeaways from this election, and I'll say from any election, is that in the aftermath of these results, we have to listen to how the politicians and party strategists are digesting these results. Because what more than what we think happened, Jason, what the politicians and the party strategists think happened is going to guide their future behavior. For example, just after the election, Jim Banks, a congressman from Indiana, head of the House a Republican Study Committee, released a memo, and it basically was saying, lean into the culture war. Like, this is part of what drove, you know, Youngkin to victory. And whether you agree with that or not, I think that is listening to that, to me, that's just one piece of evidence that Republicans are going to continue on that path. On the other side, Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, I saw he had a statement that basically said, you know, don't look too much into off year elections, because that can be tricky. Again, whether you agree with him or not, if that is the Democratic mentality, then I don't necessarily see a course correction or a change of course on the Democratic side, which could be to their detriment if they continue to underperform by 10 or 16 points in states and districts across the country. So I do this cautiously, but we do have to listen to the politicians sometime and hear what they have to say.
Yeah, the messaging, I think, is going to be really interesting because, you know, we're really, you know, we are in full 2022 mode. I mean, people are starting to retire. We're starting to get redistricting maps that are released that show, you know, maybe, you know, somebody who won comfortably by 10 plus points or whatever, regardless of whether they're a Democrat or Republican, they're, you know, like if they're in a what could be considered a more competitive district, something like this will probably weigh on, you know, how they are, you know, whether they want to a tougher race. You know, if you're a Republican, you can probably say, like, yeah, I can probably pull this out if, you know, if Youngkin and people like him can overperform. And if you're a Democrat, do you really want to run hard just to lose in a cycle that already is running against you and working against you, like, historically? And I am what you said about, like, how they behave. I mean, I feel like I need to bring up something a little sensitive about, you know, McAuliffe, which is that, did they did the Democrats really get the best candidate they had too? Because I mean, candidates do matter. This is something that you and our friend and colleague Stu Rothenberg talk about too, which is that in the end, candidates really do matter. McAuliffe was a known quantity, had a record. They could run against that. He had that Clinton like context, you know, being a big ally of the Clintons for years and years. And then he ran against somebody that had no record, you know, that could just put on a vest and you know, say, I'm just a suburban dad, you know, your average multimillionaire suburban dad. Did they make a mistake in not getting somebody fresher, say, so to speak?
The first thing that comes to mind is that it's difficult to isolate individual factors in a very complex race. When you have a race that's this close, and when you have a race that's this close, everything matters. So you could say, okay, well, if McAuliffe hadn't been, if it had been a candidate, you know, someone who wasn't a longtime politician, okay, maybe that is enough to make up a 2-3 point difference. So you say, well, what if he hadn't have said that, made the comment about parents in the debate? Okay, maybe that does make the 2 or 3 point difference. But you could also argue, what if Biden's numbers weren't underwater? What if his job approval rating was even was a little bit better? Would that have made the difference? Maybe a 2 or 3 point difference. I think it's a fair hypothetical, but if Democrats are just going to blame Terry McAuliffe, then I would just point to New Jersey and just say, okay, right. What did Phil Murphy do that caused a 16 underperformance compared to Biden from just a year ago? And so that's why if we look at them in totality, it paints a different picture for a different, you know, electoral picture.
Are you struck by how quickly things have flipped? Because, I mean, you know, last year, this time, let's just be honest. I mean, it was like difficult, right? I mean, we were making tough decisions about whether we were going to have Thanksgiving with our parents or not, and whether it was safe to travel. And everybody was on pins and needles waiting for vaccines. Now, you know, if you want a vaccine, you can literally walk into a CVS and get one. You know, like you, the schools are back open. Yes, there are some mask mandates, you know, in different places. Nobody likes wearing a mask. But like, is considering that, I mean, are you surprised at how quickly the public turned against Democrats, you know, and sort of took it out on them, really, like in at least in these two elections, in just in 10 months?
Well, I shouldn't be surprised after doing this so long. I mean, we tell ourselves that voters have short memories, and then we have elections like this to remind us about. And what was interesting in the CNN exit poll in Virginia is that when you asked when they asked about the coronavirus and COVID-19, voters trusted McAuliffe to handle the issue more. It's just that it was about the fifth. It was rated about fifth in terms of level of priority. And I think that was a key. And whereas on the economy or on education, those were higher, more priority issues, and they trusted Youngkin to handle those compared to McAuliffe. So I guess it shouldn't be a surprise, but it is. It's a reminder that when you're in charge, and I consider in Democrats in this case, having the White House, Congress, the current governorship of Virginia and New Jersey, it doesn't take long before voters hold you responsible for what's going on. Whether that's fair or not, whether it's you caused it or not, you're going to be held responsible. And that's maybe the silver lining for Democrats is that the 2022 midterms are a year away. There's a chance that we get stronger and healthier as a country, and that will then benefit those who are currently in power. But it's seeing a big Biden bounce back. How many, let's go with our alliteration today. It's hard to see how he bounces back dramatically in such a partisan environment.
I would guess, just taking sort of a wild prediction, that over the next year, the Republican messaging is going to be a lot about education, from the congressional level on down, you know, to the school board level. We're going to hear a lot about, parents having their say and so forth. And you know, we're going to hear a lot about critical race theory. We're going to hear a lot about cultural wars. As you say, Jim Banks, this is a rising star in the Republican Party, and he says, lean into this. And for the Democrats, I'm going to be curious because if they do, it sounds like we are going to get at some point this reconciliation package passed through Congress. You know, just this week they resolved one of the biggest sticking points, which is whether they were going to have some sort of ability for the federal government to negotiate Medicare prices. So that's that is a very tangible benefit. And as you said, they ran away from the healthcare in 2010. But this is a little bit more tangible, you know, especially if there's some sort of family paid leave, you know, kind of some component and the drug price negotiation. So it is people will have a very distinct choice is what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I'm interested to watch Republican candidates who are, you know, for House and the Senate, who what they do, what they take away from this, because I think the takeaway should be that you could largely take Trump's substance and get rid of his style and be successful. I think that's what Youngkin did effectively. But you have a lot of Republicans up to this point who have tried to emulate Trump's style. They want to be brash. They want to, you know, middle finger to the establishment and those Democratic liberals. And I don't know that's not what Glenn Youngkin did. But again, we have to watch and see what lessons they learned and if some of these Republicans dial it back. And that's in the context of, though some of them have to get through primaries and appeal to voters who do like President Trump, former President Trump in that style, they have to get through the primary and win the nomination before they can get to a general election. So that's the dynamic that some Republicans are going to have to walk or balance in the next set of elections.
Well, Nathan, thank you for, walking us through this. I do feel like everything is now explained. Just kidding. We still don't even know who won New Jersey. but I think that this is a good primer, and this is about as good, your analysis of takeaways. It's on roll call right now. Also gets into some of these issues and more. I direct people to that. And also, just in a couple weeks, on Tuesday, November 16th, you and I are going to be part of a webinar, CQ Roll Call webinar, put on by parent company Fiscal Note. And people, if they're interested in tuning into that webinar and hearing even more Nathan and Jason, but joined by our colleagues on the team, Politics, Herb Jaskin, Stephanie Aiken, Bridget Bowman, and Kate Ackley, you can tune in on that day. For more information, go to the webinars tab at fiscalnote.com. Nathan, enjoy the rest of your week, and thank you again.
We'll see you on the other side.